Oh, yeah. We got a big episode for you. One of our biggest of the season. It's Hayden's favorite pick in every single round. Yeah, we go 1 through 16. Basie builds his best case scenario mock draft here, and he stuns me. He stuns me with a lot of these selections based on our conversations this summer. Maybe bypasses some of the wide receivers in round 4. He bends the knee to, yes, the Jaguars real wide receiver 1. Just a couple of teases for you there. You got to listen to the full episode coming up right now. I know. All you want to know is who you should draft in your fantasy football leagues this season. So over the next 2 weeks, I'm going to give you my 15 players I'm going to bet my fantasy season on. And Hayden today is going to give you his favorite pick in every single round of your redraft leagues. Hayden, you ready to put your fantasy season on the line here at this very moment?
Written in pen. This is what these timestamps are. This is like a moment in time for the rest of the season to come back, fact check how accurate we are. This is half PPR scoring. I kind of did this as if like almost like an ideal mock draft. So it like makes sense as a team. We'll talk about some roster construction, but a lot of this is just about, you know, player takes, who I like versus Yahoo ADP.
I think you were very honest with these names, where some of them certainly go in the first pick or two of each round, but some are the 11th or the 12th pick of each round. So this is a very achievable team for all of you. So let us know if you're going to replicate it down in the comments below. Okay, we're going to go from round 1 through what? Round 14? Sorry, 16. I undersold you here. 1 through 16. So Hayden, who's your favorite pick in the first round?
This could be Jahmyr Gibbs. I'll go with Puka Nacua after doing a bunch of drafts. You can get him at the 4th, sometimes 5th overall spot. Half PPR, full PPR, I love him. We're talking about the all-time leader in receiving yards per game at 95, the clear target dominator for the offense projected for the most points by the betting markets is what the team was this last season. All it takes for Nacua to have like a truly all-time fantasy season is more red zone touchdowns. Devontae Adams had a 27% target share, Nacua 17% target share. That was last year. Devontae Adams, they were trying to trade him. He's another year older. He's been dealing with some injuries. So Puka Nacua, I love him. I think that he can have like a 400 fantasy point season, which has only happened a couple times. We're talking about the absolute prime of his career. Matthew Stafford and Sean McVay are going to dial up the offense completely around him. And I think my favorite part about him versus Jahmyr Gibbs is in that second round, if you draft Puka Nacua, a running back that we love is going to fall to you there. And I think that was the difference between drafting the Jahmyr Gibbs teams. Like all of a sudden at 24th and 25th overall, I feel less confident about that tier. So 4th overall, Puka Nacua, and we'll talk about the next falling running back.
Yeah, you know this. A year ago at this time, the one question I wanted to ask Sean McVay was, why didn't you use Puka Nacua more often in the red zone? And he did last year, albeit a lot of happened when, you know, Devontae Adams was out and missed time. But he scored 11 touchdowns last season compared to his first 2 years were 10 total touchdowns. And we know that vaunts you from like the wide receiver 7 in points per game up to the wide receiver 2 in points per game. So that's something that I have my eye on. It's also something that in the 13 personnel looks that even means more things funneled in the direction of Puka Nacua. And I am a little surprised and would love to hear you talk about this, and you kind of just did, but there's that glut of running backs that we absolutely love. So honing in on Puka Nacua is a statement for you, just how big of a season you believe he's going to have and basically a contract year on top of
it. Yeah, so this could be Jamar Chase at 4th overall. I just like kind of done the math that by the time you get to like the 20th, 21st overall pick, somebody that we really like is still going to be there. That could be a Brock Bowers. I hope with drafting a wide receiver that is actually one of these running backs could fall. So you have to get a little bit lucky here, but the math does play out in a lot of situations.
Well, the people love strategy corners. That takes us into the second round. Who's your pick?
This would be my dream start. Kenneth Walker in the middle of the second round. I have him inside my top 10 overall rankings. I have him right next to CeeDee Lamb. I'm very optimistic on Kenneth Walker. Everything from, you know, the postseason run, I loved him as a prospect. I've loved his tape as a rookie contract. Then we finally see him unleashed in a good offense through the Super Bowl. He was dominating fantasy points all the way through the postseason run once he had the backfield to himself. They sign him off the Super Bowl MVP for multi-years. He's a kind of a statement piece of this offense at this point. I've seen a lot more under center in training camp. I've seen a lot of receptions from him. 2 years ago, he was on pace for a ton of receptions. That season only lasted 11 games, but he would have got a lot more credit if he had caught 65 passes or so, which he was on pace for. Andy Reid's history has been screen game and fantasy points. I'm looking at players like Jamaal Charles, LeSean McCoy, Brian Westbrook as comps here. It's been a while since we've seen the Chiefs have a running back of this caliber. And I think this is the perfect year as Mahomes comes back from that injury. Lean on Kenneth Walker. I don't trust the receiving core over there. And just go back to the LeSean McCoy seasons, the last 3 years with Coach Reed. 1,800 scrimmage yards. I think Kenneth Walker and Shady McCoy have a lot of similarities.
We'll take credit for this, okay? Since we've joined Yahoo, let's put it that way, Ken Walker has climbed about three or four spots. And so he really was going as, I don't know, the 20th overall pick for a very long portion. And now it's up to about 17 or 16, depending on the day that you're drafting. You and I both have him as top 13 players this year. And it's a lot of what you outlined. I mean, he's averaging 17 and a half fantasy points per game over the last 26 when he's reached a 60% snap mark. I have a feeling he's going to play more than 60% of snaps every single game that he's healthy this season for the Chiefs. And we talked about last year. They had a high success rate. Some of that was Mahomes scrambling. Some of that was, you know, what Kareem Hunt brought to the table in short yardage and third and goal or third down in two situations. But man, they really struggled when dialing up the explosives. And they told you this offseason that your success rate gets you just so high and so much in terms of efficiency. And securing explosive gains is the name of the game, especially if, you know, you struggle to do that in the passing game. So what, they were 10th in rush yards before contact last year, but then 32nd in rush yards after contact per attempt. And that's a Ken Walker stat that he brings to the table immediately.
It's actually incredible how efficient the Chiefs' run game has been on a success rate basis, given the talent that they've had at running back. That's a credit to like the Creed Humphreys of the world, Trey Smith over there. And I think that the young players on the left side provide a lot of upside as well. So I think just, by the way, this is the best offensive line Kenneth Walker has played behind too. It's not just the Chiefs adding Kenneth Walker. It's like, oh, Kenneth Walker with space to operate. Like, let's see what that looks like.
Yeah, we got a wheel route highlight reel from training camp today. So it never stops in the K-9 world. He's the real addition that they made in offense. The only real addition, unless you want to count Cyrus Allen, who I'm sure we're going to talk about more and more this week. All right. So that is the fourth pick overall, the 17th pick overall. Where are you going in round three?
Malik Nabers. I'm looking at our consensus rankings as a Yahoo unit. You're the only one ranking him higher than I am. I got him 24th. You got him 23rd overall. He's still draftable in the third round. I think in full PPR leagues, I would take him at the end of the second round. I feel pretty good about where he is. All the beat reporters are saying he's going to be out there for week one. And he continues to ramp up in training camp. We're talking about a complete freak athlete, 23 years old. These are the type of guys that beat these injury kind of timelines. And from week four last year, dating back to his first game as a rookie in 2024, so about a year and a quarter, he was the wide receiver six on wide receiver three usage. My favorite part about that was the Giants were 31st in points per game, 27th in passing yards per game during that stretch. If you look at the quarterbacks that he was dealing with during that stretch, it is laughable. Jackson Dart easily clears that collection, in my opinion. There was also a time where Andrew Thomas wasn't available, their star left tackle during that stretch. They added Francis Mauanoa, who I really, really like as a guard prospect. That's where he's playing. I think this offensive line is actually pretty solid, and they still are just running the offense through Isaiah Likely and other types. So swap in Likely for Wandale Robinson. The target competition here is really minimal. I put him in just a half step below Ja'Marr Chase when I'm watching these guys on film. You should not be able to draft superstar wide receivers in the third round. I'll take the chance on Malik Nabers having a pretty normal season.
He's the final pick of the third round right now on Yahoo. And you would take him as the final pick of the second round. So this is basically a full round of value that you're getting out of Malik Nabers right now. And it's because of that weird timeline. And look, I was guilty of it, right? I was trying to read the tea leaves and read what beat writers were saying. And it really wasn't positive after, you know, the surgery last year, then a cleanup surgery earlier because, you know, rehab wasn't going well. And then in a weekend, that flipped. And that's a big deal. Like, that rarely happens for us to have to totally reset our opinions from, I don't know, June until August. And I'm having to do that. And I'm doing it in a big way. I know you were even more optimistic than I was at the time. And, you know, one side I keep coming back to was Jackson Dart having 43% of his fantasy points last year were on the ground. That is not sticky. That can't really replicate itself. And I think a major reason for that was because he only played with Malik Nabers for about two quarters. Yep. So, you know, I would expect that to drop by more than double digits heading into this year.
Yeah, I think just for Dart himself, and I don't think I listed him for this episode, but we'll get to like the late round quarterback strategy. I do like Jackson Dart just because he battled with the environment around him not very good. Like the fact that he did not have Malik Nabers the entire season, I think, is promising for that duo in general, just to make the pass game numbers look a lot better.
Before we go any further, this is our favorite time of the year. Reacting to, you know, training camp, reacting to especially preseason games, the rookies who shine, what order of the running backs are getting touches, all of it. We watch every single snap of preseason action. So lock into this channel, hit subscribe. It is totally free to all of you to do so, because we've got four shows this week. And then starting next Monday, it is our ranking changes based on what happens in preseason games. Some of the best episodes we do all year. So again, hit subscribe and leave a thumbs up so YouTube knows that you watched this episode. Round four, who is it?
This is where I have Travis Achane. And I think we're kind of overthinking this one. He has cleared almost 1,400 yards. That's 1,399 total yards in three of his four healthy seasons. And I think this Saints offensive line is the best of his career. Same thing with the Kenneth Walker. And this is something we always talk about in the offseason, is I think one of the only remaining underrated parts of fantasy football is the quality of offensive line and the analysis for that. And I'm looking at the Saints offensive line, and I know it's a lot better than what he was dealing with in Jacksonville. On top of that, Kellen Moore runs the fastest paced offense in neutral situations. Tyler Shuck, in theory, could take a huge leap in the second season. You add Jordan Tyson, all of a sudden the Saints team could be a league average offense. And even last year at times, they were kind of flirting with those numbers. He's not going to play every single situation. Guess what? That's almost every running back in the NFL. I am not nervous about Alvin Kamara. I think he's going to play a little bit, but I think Alvin Kamara is just out of gas at this point. And you don't have to play in passing situations to catch the ball. You had the stat from the last couple episodes, and I'm going to steal it. 35 of his 36 receptions last year were on early downs for Travis Achane. He was already in the committee backfield this last year. LaQuint Allen played that Alvin Kamara role, and he was still the RB11 last year while catching RB27 receptions per game. I think there's a chance he catches actually more than that, just because the Saints run more plays in general. And I know he's going to be the goal line back. I think he's a totally fine player. They paid him a lot of money. The Saints have been trying to replace Kamara for years. Look at all their draft capital. Those picks haven't worked out. This is the final big investment at the position. I would be pretty surprised if he's not like a fringe RB1 this season.
Just to reiterate a couple of the notes that you said, Kellen Moore over the last few years, first in pace with the Cowboys, fourth with the Chargers, eighth with the Eagles, which is kind of like pulling teeth with that offense.
Impossible.
Sometimes. Yeah. And then back to first last year in New Orleans. They only take 27 of the 40 seconds necessary. I mean, they just run as many plays as possible. And to go back to the offensive line comment that you made, the Saints offensive line was a disaster last year. Reeves posted this. They had the second worst offensive line cohesiveness in the league in 2025. I mean, their most quote unquote popular five offensive linemen only played together for 17% of their snaps.
Yikes. Yikes.
I mean, that's nuts. Now, yeah, they already have lost Dylan Raduns in training camp. And so he's kind of like their utility interior offensive lineman. But, you know, they went out and got David Edwards. And right now, I think you could argue they only have one weakness of the five, and that's Cesar Ruiz. Mm-hmm. And if they get him right, or if he plays at a high level or just plays an adequate level, then yeah, you really do have five very, very solid blockers to turn, you know, last year's running back usage from like 30th expected mm-hmm. points to maybe like 15th in expected points this year.
Yeah, both tackles are first rounders in 2024 and then in 2025. David Edwards has played forever. That's going to be their new left guard. And then if your weak spot is the right guard, which I agree, Cesar Ruiz has not been very good, that is at least a first rounder that we're talking about. So at least there's like some level of projectable upside there. So as in Saints offense, I've always really liked what Kellen Moore has done. They chose Travis Achane. They gave him a lot of money, and I think they were going to ride him.
It is fascinating, though, doing all these shows with you, some might say too many. There are two running backs that go in the fourth round. It's Cam Scadaboo and it's Travis Achane. Right now on Yahoo, actually, Cam Scadaboo is going ahead of Achane. Mm. But we just talk at length of those round four wide receivers, and you'll hear about probably a handful of them in, you know, this video for me next week. It's Zay Flowers, T-Mac, Jalen Waddle, Emeka Igbuka, Ladd, Garrett Wilson. Yeah. And you said a lot of words about them, but now when we get to this actual video of the draft that you want to make, you're taking a running back in round four.
Yeah, maybe that's because I was undecided about all those wide receivers. How can you possibly pick one that you like? I do think there is something to it, though. In half PPR, the running backs just score a lot more points than that, like that collective group of wide receivers. And that, to me, you just have to ask yourself, Scadaboo, Achane, Josh Jacobs, Javonte Williams, those guys, are they going to be the lead back in the goal line back and catch 30, 40, 50 passes this season for the entire year? If so, they're going to smoke that collective wide receiver group. I think I feel pretty good that Travis Etienne is going to be one of those guys to hold on to this like very valuable starting role. And then maybe a couple of those wide receivers outscore him. And then the rest of them will just not be able to match up.
Yeah, it's... If you asked me which one of those six wide receivers I just mentioned is going to be number one in scoring, I might give you a different name every day of the week.
I know.
So it's, it is very difficult. If you want to see how we rank all of these players that we're talking about, our free rankings are in the description down below, both half PPR and full PPR over on Yahoo. They are updated every single Thursday. So lock in. We have those free for you in the description. Okay, take us to round five.
Very similar conversations. DeAndre Swift here, and he was the RB15 on RB19 usage this past season. He was kind of like a 2-for-1 split with Kyle Benungai there. Both were effective. I just think that DeAndre Swift offers a little bit more in general creativity than Kyle Benungai. The Bears offense last year was about top 10. That's where they're projected for this season as well. But I think there's a chance like they can finish even higher than that. I don't think that Kyle Benungai is going to just like take DeAndre Swift's job here. I think it's going to be some level of a tandem in this offense behind that offensive line with Ben Johnson is good enough for DeAndre Swift to be a kind of high upside RB2. I think if something happened to Kyle Benungai, he would comfortably be a top 10 running back in weekly rankings for me. So I think there's a little bit more upside for him than some of the other running backs in this tier. And it's a very tricky tier of running backs because it's guys like Bashel Touton, Travion Henderson, Bucky Irving. I think that you can really expect those guys to also be in committees. I feel really good about what the Chicago Bears offense is, and DeAndre Swift has a lot of pedigree. And I think to his credit, last year, I thought was his best NFL season, just 100%. Watching him way more decisive. And I think Ben Johnson tailored the play calls directly for DeAndre Swift. And he's also always been a very effective receiver in the screen game and stuff because of his athletic ability. So I just think that Ben Johnson has DeAndre Swift dialed in a way where I want to believe in his athletic abilities more so than nitpick all the warts that we used to have with him a couple seasons ago.
Yeah, I mean, prior to last season, I was not a DeAndre Swift guy. Every team that he was on basically replaced him and those backfields improved. And in the opening, four games of last season, it was much of the same, running back 28, 24, 27, 18. Then they hit the bye week, and it's exactly what you said. You know what? Benedette was in there at left tackle for a lot. Yeah. They were running a lot of these outside plays, the tosses, and the runs they were giving to Manungai were very different than DeAndre Swift. And you could tell they went to the lab during the bye week and figured out exactly, okay, Swift excels here, Manungai excels here. And then after that, he was a running back 9 in points per game from week 6 and on, when, again, the Bears really figured out exactly what to do with him. And that ended up with his best season in terms of yards per touch. And he produced a run of 10 or more yards on 13.5% of his runs, which was 6th in the league. And that's, again, factoring him here as a 5th-round pick because he's splitting the backfield, maybe 50-50, maybe 60-40, maybe 2-for-1, maybe 1-for-1 in drives. But like you said, if Manungai goes down, they're just not going to give Roschon Johnson every single touch that Manungai had. And then that's like DeAndre Swift to the absolute moon. And we've seen Manungai, miss a handful of days in camp so far this season too.
Yeah, I had to look up who their RB3 was. It still is Roschon Johnson. So it would be a complete moonshot. I think that even in his baseline scenarios, let's say it's the same 60-40-ish split, I think that DeAndre Swift is like perfectly priced as an RB two, RB3 in the 5th round. That's where he is. That's the baseline case. And there's a pretty pretty clear path of either Manungai missing time or DeAndre Swift's like, oh, I'm just like another tier above in the second year of the system. So give me all the Bears.
Just to reset, Puka Nacua in round 1 is the 4th overall pick. Ken Walker in round 2 as the 5th pick in the 2nd round. Then in round 3, Malik Nabers as the final pick in that round. Round 4, that is Travis Achan as the 5th pick in that round. And here we are with DeAndre Swift with the 1st pick of the 5th round. So take us into round 6.
All right, Kyle Pitts. And this is kind of where Strategy Corner comes into play. I think there's a, kind of a teardrop after the top 8 guys. This could be Harold Fannin. If you're a big Harold Fannin guy, I really like him as well. The thing about Kyle Pitts, though, is he goes last of that group. And there's a proven upside with him, which is something that I like to kind of track. Last year, I thought it was the healthiest he's looked since that rookie season. I think he's probably stronger nowadays versus then as well. The prime of fantasy tight end careers is age 25, 26, and that's where he is right now. It's kind of when you have the mental maturity to understand all the roles and responsibilities, but you're still a freak athlete like Kyle Pitts is. I saw him just run away from guys. I thought his agility bounced back, and we saw it when Drake London went down. He averaged 7 receptions, 84 yards in the 5 games without London. Obviously, Drake London's healthy right now. He should be good to go. But the fact that you have this huge contingent upside case is a feather in his cap, just because the Falcons don't have any depth at tight end 2, wide receiver 2, wide receiver 3. It really is just Pitts, London, and Bijan. I like these concentrated offenses. I'm really worried about the Falcons' defense. They're not going to have either of their top pass rushers that they drafted in the first round. Remember, they traded picks for them, so they just don't have any depth on defense at all. So I think this team could just find themselves in like pathetic garbage time. You know, Tua drops back 44 times and then Kyle Pitts gets home. It's not going to be the prettiest thing, but I'm just betting on Kyle Pitts, you know, the generational tight end, starting to look like the guy that we drafted really high many years ago.
I am nervous about associating myself with anyone attached to Tua Tagovailoa in 2026. I mean, the decline in his game, I think, is really evident.
Yep.
With that said, when everything is funneled and a tight end can be the second best pass catcher on an offense, that's when we get these explosive seasons. It's that simple.
Yep.
And those kind of get more and more difficult to find every single year. And I actually think we're kind of resetting in that department in 2026 with the use of heavier personnel. And even Kyle Pitts has talked about this, asked on July 31st. He says he really enjoys 13 personnel and the ability to potentially be in a tight and dominant offense. Kevin Stefanski on August 7th on 13 personnel. It's something I've been a part of over the years. It's all about getting good players on the field and the response you get from the defense in those situations. It's Drake London. It's Kyle Pitts. And then you have like Charlie Werner and Austin Hooper. So who's going to get the football? Who's going to get the most chances in those opportunities? So I would love for Kyle Pitts to get more gimmies like he has received in certain seasons versus these downfield shots of 17 plus yards, because we associate that with upside when really the upside is like, hey, getting 7 or 8 targets per game.
And I will note, Kevin Stefanski did a really good job with David Njoku and Fannin manufacturing touches underneath screen stuff. Even David Njoku at the time, like, you wouldn't think that he's like some like yards after the catch demon. And he started becoming that in the absolute peak of his prime. And last year we did see Kyle Pitts, his A dot came down. And I'm reading into that, just watching the games from him, is the fact that he can actually cut. Like, now you can run slant routes. Now you can run the in cuts and the out cuts, the like quick out routes that like the PPR reception upside that we're talking about at tight ends, where before he just like simply couldn't turn. Like, there's a couple seasons in a row he could not turn left, so it's hard to run those routes. I think that now that he's fully healthy again, maybe we get that. And I think your point, the second option in the pass game, that's something I really love. Sam Laporta, I really love Tucker Kraft. Those offenses are awesome. Both those guys can get home. But to me, like, who's more likely to finish with, you know, the 80th reception of the season? To me, it's Kyle Pitts over those two guys.
And this is the trio I always talk about, the Norv Turner, Kevin Stefanski, Drew Petzing stuff. Yeah. And so while you can say, well, all the Trey McBride production last year was Trey McBride and no one else, primary read of the offense in a lot of situations has been the tight end in these looks. And Kyle Pitts is a fun one for, you know, Kevin Stefanski to coach, who coached Harold Fannin last year. Okay. Kyle Pitts is the last pick in this round, and your next name is the first pick of the 7th round.
Jaylen Warren. He was quietly the RB20 on RB22 usage last year. That was when Kenny Gainwell was the RB26 on RB25 usage. Completely different roles, and we're going to go kind of like switch them back out, where I think Warren's going to be the clear pass catcher over Rico Dowdle. And if you just like look at the history between McCarthy and Aaron Rodgers, that's like a pretty important part of the backfield. But I would say, compared to Kenny Gainwell, I think there's a very reasonable chance that we can have Jaylen Warren stealing a bunch of the goal line touches from Rico Dowdle. Like, I think that Jaylen Warren runs with more pop than Rico Dowdle. I think that Rico is a little bit more powerful, but Jaylen Warren does pack a punch. He's going to be out there in pass protection. And this is another one of these teams where the offensive line is pretty dang good. They've got to figure out the exact what they're going to do at the final left tackle spot. But the rest of that offensive line between center, right tackle, the guards that they're kind of swapping around, it's a pretty good unit over there. And I think in general, I think Jalen Warren fits the McCarthy-Rodgers offense more than the Rico Dowdle stuff. And there is a history between Dowdle and McCarthy, but most of that history was as a backup. I think most teams view Rico Dowdle as a compliment, you know, like 4-minute drill, it's run out the clock situation. And I think that the first snap of the season is definitely going to be with Jalen Warren. I think he's a candidate to catch 60 passes this year. And I would not be surprised if the goal line role is cut pretty evenly between Dowdle and Warren. That's a pretty interesting profile for somebody that's like in the prime of his career and has kind of been like an analytics film guy darling for a long time. Like maybe this is like the best season of his career. The moment we've always been waiting for with him happens maybe a year after the hype has kind of left the station.
So he's going as running back 28 in the same round of Ramondre Stevenson and then Rico Dowdle, his teammate. You've kind of lost me on this one a little bit. Not because I don't think Jalen Warren's going to have a good season. I just don't know if he would be my favorite pick in this round. So like that's obviously a different statement to make. And some of it comes to what you mentioned in Rico Dowdle's history with Mike McCarthy. I mean, 1,300 yards in the season that he started with McCarthy. And then he also had a 1,300-yard season last year with the Carolina Panthers. And while Jalen Warren is probably bigger than he's perceived and bigger than the role that was associated to him early in his career, he has not been that successful in terms of goal to go situations. Now, a lot of that can be offensive line driven 100%. Yeah. But for his career, Reeves wrote that Jalen Warren has converted 6 of 30 goal to go runs for scores. So if he fails on those early on and Rico succeeds, which he did last year, then I think that role can flip quite early, even if it does go to Warren early on, and it might not.
Yeah, I think just last year, both Gainwell and Warren paid off this price tag. So you kind of have two different outs at it, where even in a part-time role, we saw Jalen Warren pay off this like RB28 sticker price that we have here. And that's when Kenny Gainwell, you know, was the team MVP. So we'll see. I think this one can play out either way. I would rather have Jalen Warren, just the incumbent, to me, just a little bit more explosive. Some breaking ties in favor of him. And yeah, I'll leave it at that.
It's Yahoo Fantasy Football's 29th year. And to celebrate, we're kicking off 29 days of fantasy. Starting today, Yahoo Sports is dropping brand new fantasy feature every single day for 29 days straight. That's 29 days, 29 features, all built to help you dominate your league in 2026. Eighth round, one of my favorite picks, and I'm glad you're on board.
Yeah, Parker Washington, he should not go in the eighth round, period. His ADP might be higher than that. And if, you know, he was in the same round as Jalen Warren, I would have included Parker Washington there in the seventh round too as well. So just way too low. He's going to be the target leader for Jacksonville. Everything about the training camp, everything about how the season ended last year, everything about his role, he's a slot to Z player out there. And then he could run the dig routes, shallow crosses, slant screens, all that type of stuff, as Brian Thomas, you know, runs the vertical routes, as Travis Hunter subs in and runs some more vertical routes. It seems like Parker Washington's the guy that's not going to be leaving the field. From week 7 on, he became a near full-time player. He was PPR's wide receiver 18 on wide receiver 15 usage. That was a 21% target share over that. I don't really see a reason why that can't like hold partially true here. And they have the entire offseason to like really start building the entire pass game around everything from John Shipley. Is like, this is the guy. They're about to pay him a ton of money. And if you go back and watch his film, like, he did have some real high end moments against the best corners in the NFL.
Of course.
So I don't know what there's not to like at this point.
Yeah. I mean, with all of Parker Washington, Jacoby Myers, and Brian Thomas on the field last year, Parker Washington led them in target share and then had the highest 3.17 yards per route run on top of it. And as you said, when he's 63% in the slot in three receiver sets and then goes out wide in two wide receiver sets, that's exactly the role that we want in a Liam Cohen offense, and especially where he catches passes over the middle in the intermediate portion. I do have to bring this up, though, because, you know, we have talked so much about Jacksonville's wide receiver room all summer long. That has been like the topic in fantasy football. And then as recently as 2 weeks ago, you and Harmon said, well, we're going to take Brian Thomas Jr. as a top Jaguars wide receiver. Have you changed? Are you now Parker Washington as wide receiver 1 with the Jaguars?
Yeah, especially in full PPR. Just like the training camp stuff has been very, very key. And there's something else that we'll talk to with Travis Hunter in a little bit, that he's coming on the field, but it's not to be this kind of slot role that he was in last year. It's to play more of the vertical role, which I think he's going to be awesome at. But that reads to me maybe that if one guy's coming off the field, it could end up being Brian Thomas runs, you know, 80% of the routes. That's still good enough for him to be in the mix. But if Parker Washington's like truly close to 100%, and then something else that John Shipley said is who's more likely to get extended? No doubt about it. It's Parker Washington. They'll eventually let Brian Thomas walk. Let's just, you know, take that at face value.
Yep, 100%. Yeah, I think we hypothesized as much about Travis Hunter a couple days ago. I can't remember what show. They all run together at this point. Yeah, I mean, Parker Washington is clearly the highest ranked Jaguars wide receiver for me. I mean, he finishes their best pass catcher last year, so why wouldn't he be the highest ranked? He does such a cool job of combining the small and big game in terms of wide receiver, where the small quickness, yards after the catch, and then wins big in terms of when a corner does have tight coverage on him, he can climb the ladder and go up and get it. I mean, he is a complete player and is an absolute joy to watch. I hope he gets paid prior to the season. Let's put it that way. Or else the Jaguars might have to pay a lot more.
He might say, watch what I'm going to put on tape this year, and then we'll talk about paychecks next year.
Yeah, I think his third pick in the eighth round price tag right now as the 87th overall player is one of the most egregious ADPs out there right now.
Completely agree. I got him at 66th overall in half PPR, 54th overall in full PPR. I think he's going to catch up a bunch of balls.
I absolutely love it. Check out our rankings in the description down below. Next, the ninth round.
More strategy corner here. This is where a lot of these quarterbacks are priced. And I really like what my team looks like when I've absolutely hammered the flex position like we have in this draft so far. And then in the ninth round, you kind of double dip. Pick your favorite combination of quarterbacks. I'll say it right now. Bo Nix is the one that I've been gravitating for. I draft a lot of Jalen Waddle. I didn't include him here off of that injury. We're going to learn more about that as the next couple of days come through. But Bo Nix has been a top 10 quarterback in back-to-back seasons. He runs. They're really pass heavy. They play with enough pace. And now you add Jalen Waddle to the mix and everything about his training camp. I know he's coming off the broken ankle. Everyone says he looks the exact same. He's running around and he was out there on the first day of camp. He's progressed exactly how they wanted to. I was listening to him talk about the offensive coordinator in Davis Webb. When he visited the Broncos before he was drafted, he did his one-on-ones with Davis Webb, and that's been his main point of contact with the team. So I do think there's a one of the reasons why he's now like retained and going to be calling plays is because I think Sean Payton's like, I'm going to coach up the rest of the team. Davis Webb and Bo Nix, you guys are married at the hip. You guys go at it. And I think that's a good thing for Bo Nix. And just, you know, you add Jalen Waddle, like let's see what happens. So double dip with any of these quarterbacks, but I really do like the Bo Nix ADP.
We've been covering, if you want to put it that way, Sean Payton for long enough that do you think he just gifted play calling away to Davis Webb like he wanted to? No, there was a reason behind this, right? And the reason probably is the relationship between Bo Nix and Davis Webb, as you just outlined. And as great as Sean Payton has been in terms of creating, you know, playoff environments and Super Bowl winning environments and making really good prospects out of some overlooked guys on top of it, he can kind of get like caught in his ways a little bit. And, you know, bringing Jalen Waddle should alleviate all of the tendency to lean on, we're going to spam these screens. We're going to, you know, run this boot action. We're going to do all this stuff over and over and over again. But what they can continue to do is that the Broncos had the third most passes off play action last year. And now you get Jalen Waddle, who's has a 4 yards per route run off play action last season in a down year.
Yep.
So we've talked about it at length, right? Screens, crossers, slants, downfield stuff. That's the name of the game here. That's what Jalen Waddle runs when you close your eyes. And it is like a 1-to-1 fit. And I just hope we get 17 games out of him, because that is like the natural elevation to bringing like Bo Nix, who I think is being drafted as a quarterback 15, up to like a quarterback 8 finish this year.
Yeah, I mean, he did quarterback 9 back-to-back years without Jalen Waddle. So, like, and the other thing with Bo Nix is it feels like we talk about him as if, like, his game is just, like, capped and, like, this is just, like, what he's, this is, like, a finished product. We're talking about a year 3 quarterback. Like, year 3 quarterbacks typically get better than their first and second seasons on top of that. And the Sean Payton playbook is, like, notoriously, like, difficult to pick up. So, like, as he gets more reps, I feel like he'll be a little bit more comfortable. So, really like him.
He is great at avoiding sacks. Sometimes it feels like he moves too much, and maybe like when year 3 happens, he settles into that. But, you know, he can scramble. He's athletic on top of it, even with this hurt ankle that he's coming off of last year. All right, that's your first quarterback, and you waited until round 9. Again, we just completed a mock draft at the end of last week, and in your home leagues with, like, again, at least 15 quarterbacks, maybe even 18 quarterbacks that we like, waiting and waiting and waiting is certainly not a bad strategy. But we'll talk about mm-hmm. that here in a little bit too. That brings us to round 10. Who's your pick?
Josh Downs. Michael Pittman leaves, basically traded for nothing. I mean, it was a 6th to 7th round pick swap. And the Colts, and this is something that Jacob Sanderson has talked about, is the Colts have enough money right now where they could afford the Michael Pittman contract. So, like, they got rid of him just because they didn't want him. And I think part of that is they're looking at expanded roles for Tyler Warren, who I almost included in this conversation. But also, to obviously Josh Downs. Right now, Alec Pierce is still rehabbing. I saw a tweet from Colts camp that he's, like, still moving around gingerly. Don't like that, maybe to the point where Alec Pierce might start the actual NFL season on PUP, which would be a 4-game absence. At that point, it's going to be like Josh Downs, freaking Keenan Allen, like Nick Westbrook-Keenan. It's not pretty over there. I think they have no choice but to get him in 2 wide receiver set snaps. We'll see how successful he is as, like, an actual boundary wide receiver. I think it's something you talked about on our one of our shows this offseason. It's like, there's diminishing returns. Like, he's a vertical slot player, but even if he's less, you know, less good on the outside stuff, you still want him on the outside. You're going to get more targets in that role. Daniel Jones moving around well. I have all the faith in the world for Shane Steichen. I think that he's maybe the most underrated play caller in the NFL. And I think that this is the first year where we're actually going to get Josh Downs into the role where he can actually have a chance to be fantasy viable. And if Alec Pierce isn't out there, I mean, how is he not going to be at least like a wide receiver 3 to start the season? And then we'll figure it out from there.
Yeah, we're talking about the 113th overall pick on Yahoo right now, the wide receiver 41. So, like, any hesitation that I might have about Josh Downs as a legit 2 wide receiver, line him up on the outside, win downfield, big boy routes, man-to-man coverage, it's like totally baked in, you know? I don't need to bring that up every single time Josh Downs' name is brought up because it's just going to sound like I'm overly negative. I'm really not. I want to see him thrive in this situation. I want to. I'm just a little bit skeptical based on the small number of opportunities and examples that he got last year of him doing it. But, like, we're talking about, what, 12 routes last year basically versus maybe 80 of them. And at the same time, they can also line him up in the slot into wide receiver sets by, you know, having a wide receiver on the outside and him and on the interior, and then, you know, Tyler Warren on the opposite side. So, like, these are all ways that Shane Steichen can get these players in advantageous situations to win. Hayden, do you think they're going to sign Keenan Allen? Yes or no?
I would say it's looking fairly likely.
Yeah. Would that do anything to your Josh Downs propaganda?
Not really.
Yeah.
I think they need somebody, you know, Alec Pierce does
not sound like he's on a great timeline right now.
Right. So, you know, if it's him versus Keenan Allen in the first 4 weeks of the season, I like my chances. Keenan Allen's, like, I think, still a respectable player, but I think it's, you know, more of a Band-Aid solution. And you'd assume that he just gets a little bit worse every single season. And Keenan Allen did slow down by the very end of last year's campaign.
Take us into round 11.
This is talking about the double dip. Jordan Love is my favorite 11th round pick. Last year, he was quarterback 2 in EPA per dropback. I would even say the offensive line was good that season. I'm not sure if they're going to be good this year, but there's at least room for some growth there. I think they're simplifying the playbook and simplifying the rotation. Christian Watson is, like, now fully healthy, and he was balling out the last part of the season. They kind of changed his role for the better. Jaden Reed, they just signed him. He's going to be in the slot as a vertical manufactured touch player. Tucker Kraft only played half a season last year. He's back in the mix. And then Matthew Golden, who we'll get to in a second, has been absolutely balling in training camp to the point where all the beat reporters feel very good about where he's at. He had a big catch and family night on top of that. So it's never been about efficiency for Jordan Love. It's only just been about play volume. I think they're at the point, looking at their defense without Micah Parsons, to at least start the season, where he's going to have some big games early on. That division is just loaded with top-end offenses. Their defenses are a little bit more hit and miss in that division. And something that the Packers have been talking about is just more pace in training camp, more pace throughout the offseason program. This team has been dead last in neutral pace over, like, the last 4 years, like the Jordan Love era. And they've been really balanced on offense because that was, like, the prime of Josh Jacobs' career. That offensive line 2 years ago was a lot better than this one. I'm wondering if they're really going to get to the point where they're like, Jordan Love's the most important player on this team. Like, let's build the offense around him. And I think that they have the skill talent to do that. So if we get more dropbacks, I think that Jordan Love has a chance to be a top 12-ish quarterback, which is saying a lot because there's, you know, 18 potential top 12 quarterbacks this year.
And I would love for him not to get banged up, you know, in like week eight and
that'd be nice.
You know, miss one game and then, you know, play limp with this injury and still play at a high level. So it kind of makes us forget about it. But it does feel like every single season he does play with a rib that he kind of has to hide it, or, you know, they can't run under center stuff as much as they want to, so on and so forth. So he's an ambitious thrower. He's one of the most enjoyable quarterbacks to watch across the league. And yeah, I mean, there's just so many quarterbacks this year. And while Love, I understand why he's going as quarterback 18, it's simply because he doesn't scramble as much as others. And you said the play volume too. Injuries happen. Other things happen to other players too. And just when you have more touchdowns versus someone else and you're a dropback passer, that is then what elevates you into, you know, the top 12 quarterback status. And you can easily squint your eyes and see that happen with Jordan Love this year.
Yeah, the depth of this position is the reason why I like the double dip strategy the most right now. Especially some of your league mates will only draft one quarterback. And then in that situation, like, these guys are going to keep falling and falling and falling in your draft, where you could spend like your last pick on somebody like him. In one of the Yahoo columns I wrote, which, by the way, go to Yahoo Sports and you can read some of my stuff. I said that Jared Goff can like lead the NFL in passing yards, and he goes as like the quarterback 17. Like, there's so much depth. And Malik Willis, if you really wanted to wait, he's also intriguing to me. So to me, like, no doubt about it, the best value that you can have is double dip, play the injuries, play the matchups will help you guys out throughout the season. I think that in two of these, Jackson Dart, Trevor Lawrence, Dak Prescott, all the way down to this tier, I think two of these guys makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, Kyler is going in the same round as Bo Nix. And then Malik Willis is going the same round as Jordan Love over on Yahoo. Your comment about the pace of this offense previously and Sean Mannion now going to the Eagles is making me slightly nervous about my Saquon Barkley stance if he carries that like slow pace of play. And that's something I hadn't considered enough this summer. But that's a conversation for another time. All right. Round 12, who's your pick?
Xavier Worthy. This is where I feel less confident about this selection, but I just want to lean into the potential upside with him. He's, you know, back to practice. Rashee Rice is definitely rounding into form himself. He did not look right a couple days ago. Travis Kelce is obviously a step slower. So we'll see. It's just like, you know, the Chiefs offense, Mahomes can just go burr. And then if Rashee Rice isn't himself, Travis Kelce takes a step back, or Xavier Worthy just like steps up his own game, all those are like potential outs here. And he's being priced, you know, where he kind of typically has finished while playing through injuries. In that rookie season, he kind of had like a top 30-ish season with Rashee Rice out. So kind of just like smoothing everything out, he just seems like the more likely scenario is that he would like boom versus this price tag versus completely flop. I think that the big thing was listening to Coach Reed about Xavier Worthy's role. The first or the second play of the season for them was one of these kind of like crazy run plays to Xavier Worthy. And then he got smoked on that mesh pattern by Travis Kelce. They said after that injury, when he was playing through it, they didn't trust that he was going to be able to survive, which I think they still have some of those concerns. But they removed the screen games from Xavier Worthy. They removed the crossing routes for Xavier Worthy. That's like the best usage of Xavier Worthy. They made him like a vertical X receiver, and it was just not going to work out. He had an injured ankle. So injuries are always going to be a part of this when you're 145 pounds, wherever the hell he is. Like, this is what you're signing up for. But I think for a stretch, maybe in best ball, like a big explosive game, I think there's at least like some upside pathways here. Not my favorite, but we're talking about the 12th round.
Yeah, I'm pretty skeptical of Xavier Worthy and like what he's going to become. Like, what is he in the NFL? The stat I always bring up from Nick Arcolano is that in games where Rashee Rice has played, Xavier Worthy has averaged 2.7 catches per game. That's not a lot.
It's not a lot of stuff.
And I totally get with Rashee Rice maybe starting slow this season. And maybe, Hayden, if I can make a point for you, maybe your Ken Walker, the third pick in round two, is also a Xavier Worthy in round 12 selection. Meaning, if Ken Walker III is so successful rushing the football, then the coverage has to change. These two high shells then change that the Chiefs have seen over and over and over again. And if that is the case, then maybe Xavier Worthy, with his downfield stuff that he really hasn't hit on, I mean, caught 4 of 16 of 20 plus targets last season. We know it's been almost worse than that in two previous years. And albeit not all of that is on him. Some of it's on the quarterback too, who just blatantly missed him when he was open down the field.
Yep.
Maybe he makes life easier for Xavier Worthy this year in a way that Xavier Worthy hasn't had that ease in terms of the running game previously.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I'm just really hoping that some of the Rashee Rice manufacture touches ends up on his plate. And I think that like the gap between the two kind of closes. But yeah, this is more of like you got to squint to kind of see it. And there's a lot of other wide receivers kind of in this range that you can kind of play that same game. It's like a Jalen Coker. Like you can squint and see it. So we'll see. Third round wide receivers or first round wide receivers, like their third season. Like, you know, it's like your Quentin Johnson type of profile where like they don't have to be great. If they're in the right role, they kind of run hot for a little bit. You can have a top 30 finish in this type of role.
So he's 12th round. Stephon Diggs is also going the 12th round now. And then your next pick has actually moved, and we'll take credit for this one again, also into the 12th round. So who is it?
Matthew Golden. I would take him over Xavier Worthy. And I think if I was trying to stack these up, I would go Golden first and then Jordan Love. I really think highly of Matthew Golden at this point. Just everything about the offseason has been encouraging. They chose to let Romeo Doubs go. They traded Dontavian Wicks, obviously, not for a whole lot with either one of those guys. To me, that's just they have a lot more faith in Matthew Golden. They talked about that they don't want to rotate these guys in the family night game, which is like their like dress rehearsal for the season. He was out there in two wide receiver sets. He had a long touchdown. The training camp clips have been very positive for Matthew Golden. They've talked about him as like an MVP. This is like the consensus around all these guys. I think if you go back and actually watch his tape as a rookie, was he perfect? Absolutely not. Some of his kind of chemistry was off. They talked about maybe not a full understanding of the playbook. I think those type of things get worked on in the second offseason. And I think those type of things are not going to be a concern. There was never a part of me that was like, this is not a good enough athlete. He's a too bad of a right. route runner for this to work. He was barely missed a couple times down the football field. He had a couple yards after the catch moments at the very end of the season, something that LaFleur has said, we got to get more involved there. And he's going to be playing the Romeo Doubs role that was a fantasy hit this last season. And Matthew Golden just moves at a completely different pace as Romeo Doubs. So to me, this is like we overthought it as a community. This is a former first rounder on a very efficient offense that I think is going to be playing almost every single snap this year. These guys are typically seventh, eighth round picks. Like we just didn't like him as a prospect. He didn't play enough snaps last year to kind of give him the benefit of the doubt. I think a lot of those concerns have been alleviated this offseason.
Yeah, I don't think you and I have overthought him. Like you and I would take him two or maybe even three rounds earlier than this.
Him versus Downs would be hard for me to decide.
Yes, and that's a 10th round pick we're talking about here. Yeah, I mean, I would take Matthew Golden ahead of Xavier Worthy 100 times out of 100.
Yes.
Yeah, and that's me who didn't even love what Matthew Golden put on tape last year in every single situation. But he has obvious areas where he wins, right? And I think he's going to be ideal for an X in this environment that also sets up Christian Watson as a Z, and they can kind of play off each other with all that stuff. So I am drafting so much Matthew Golden. I am still amazed that he is going so late. I'm hoping he doesn't play a single snap of preseason action so we can continue to draft him late and late and late, because Hayden, if he plays and has like five catches this preseason or something and makes one or two splash plays, then again, this can easily climb three rounds in a full weekend. And then we have to kind of not necessarily reassess everything, but the value becomes much different of a proposition.
I just saw it on family night. That's all I need to see. Two wide receiver sets, catch a 50-yard pass. Everyone just said this is what he looks like the entire offseason. Like, perfect, sold. Like, I think that he's a wide receiver 4 waiting to be a wide receiver 3.
Round 14.
Chris Rodriguez. This is another one just kind of catching up on some news. I'm not expecting a crazy season from Chris Rodriguez. I'm expecting Bashaul Tuten to play the first snap of the game. I'm expecting LaQuint Allen to play almost every single passing situation. This is what I thought was going to be the case. This is what John Shipley has been reporting. This just makes the most sense for the profiles between Tuten, the most explosive guy, Chris Rodriguez, the most efficient, the most bruiser type for goal line situations, and then LaQuint Allen, one of the better pass protectors and receiving backs in the NFL. We'll see. Chris Rodriguez, can you know just fart into the end zone 10 times? We've had seasons like this. Jamal Williams like comes to mind, like a really good offense, and he's just the goal line guy, and then there he goes. And if something happens to Tuten, whether he like fully busts, which I think unlikely, but definitely possible, like not the most reliable guy out there. Or if he misses time, like, could you see a Javonte Williams type of season here? Like the Jaguars finish like the Cowboys did. He doesn't come off the field in the most valuable situations, and he's just scoring a bunch of touchdowns. I think like that's like the type of upside here. For him to hit that, it's a lot harder because Tuten's in the way. But I think those type of seasons exist. In half PPR, you're just praying for a goal line touchdown in week 6 when your top running back is on bye. Like, I like those odds.
It's fair to say that Bashaul Tuten's going to get the first crack at it. I also think it's fair to say that Liam Cohen, because of his history with Chris Rodriguez, isn't just going to leave Chris Rodriguez out to die in terms of his backfield, right?
Yep.
I mean, just some of the quotes. And these guys say a lot. They like to talk. James
Gadsden, really do.
They really like to. They go on like podcasts every single week. It's kind of nuts. But something that Liam Cohen said, I've worked with Chris Rodriguez. What he brings is efficiency. What we are hunting up is efficiency. It's very difficult to create explosives in the run game. So what we are hunting up is 4-6-8-10. 4-6-8-10. We want to evolve. We have to evolve. Again, I've said it before. I'll say it again. I think that's aiming really low in terms of the rushing attack, especially one that Liam Cohen can diagram. But he wanted to bring in, you know, Chris Rodriguez. And like you said, if Bashir Tutin continues to trip over his feet, and I'm a big Bashir Tutin guy this year, I'm drafting more Tutin than I am Chris Rodriguez. And he was even efficient last year in terms of inside the 10, inside the 20 yard touches. Chris Rodriguez is right there just to get with the offensive line block for him, break a tackle, and create a little bit more. And if the bar is low to achieve that, Chris Rodriguez can achieve that. And so he's going to follow through with what his responsibility and what his job is. And, you know, you're able to get that in round 14.
Yeah. C-Rod's 224 pounds. Tutin is 5'9", 209. And then in some of the scrimmages.
Short, not small. Short, not small, Tutin.
Yes. C-Rod's 5'11", 224. That's a big guy right there. And then in the scrimmages, whether they're at the goal line, like going into the end zone or trying to get themselves out of their own end zone, that's been the Chris Rodriguez role. I'm fully translating that to he's going to be the goal line guy for most of this season. And we'll see. Like, sometimes you just get run really pure and he scores 12 rushing touchdowns and that's a wrap.
We even saw that with Raheem Mostert at like age 31, you know, in Miami a couple of years ago too. So it is definitely possible. Okay. That brings us to now round 15. We have back-to-back Jacksonville Jaguars here.
Travis Hunter, you know, if he's playing corner for the first month of the season only, then we can cut him. I think that there's a real chance that he plays, and this is what John Shipley is, we keep referencing him because he just is so dialed in and he knows that fantasy football is putting the lights on for him. And his recent projections have been about 80% of the snaps at corner and like maybe it's 50% snaps on offense. Like, give me 50% of the snaps on offense and see what his talent brings to the table. If something happens to any of the wide receivers, he can slot into the slot, which we saw last season. And where you and I really liked his game was actually like on these big post patterns in college. And he can play X receiver. He can play the second boundary spot in two wide receiver sets. And I think that he can also do this the underneath stuff if they want to as well. So I think the pathways here are way, way, way too high for Travis Hunter. I think the baseline case is it doesn't really matter that much. It's kind of hard to predict. But if something happens where he's just undeniably too good, he's actually Shohei Ohtani of football, and you cannot take him off the field on either side of the ball, or if an injury happens, like we're going to be looking around, like we were really drafting like these kind of low ceiling scrub wide receivers over the second overall pick in the NFL draft, somebody that was an absolute superstar at wide receiver in college, even though he wasn't even practicing that position. I think it looks good that he's so much stronger this season. That makes me more optimistic that he can actually handle both sides of the ball here. Another season where he's not like looking at the sideline, trying to figure out what the play call is. Like all those type of things to me seem like they're going to get smoothed out. And I think that he's going to play more offense than we thought about a month ago.
He would have played much more offense last year and his career probably would have changed if he didn't have that bye week injury. I mean, he helped win the game against the Chiefs. He helped win the game with the 49ers with these big downfield patterns that he went up and got in contested coverage. And like we're doing it again, right? We're drafting Travis Hunter, but don't get upset with us because look at the price tag. We're talking round 14, round 15 here. Think about every single round 14, round 15 pick. Yep. That you've had. Either they pay off in a big way or you cut them. And there's a lot of turnover when we talk about redraft here. So I think the upside is simply amazing. And I've been saying it. I don't think Brian Thomas Jr. is like long for his career in Jacksonville. I think we've seen the best of him in Jacksonville. So we will see what happens. And the way to get Travis Hunter on the field is the Brian Thomas Jr. role at this point.
Yep,
that's it.
Maybe Myers.
Next. Yeah, but they just paid Jacoby Myers on top of this. Like, you know, if we look at the when someone was drafted, who drafted them, what they gave up for him, like BTJ is kind of the lowest on that list and everyone else has, you know, skipped him in line with that. But I don't want to dive too much in that because that might not happen. Next, we'll close out with round 16.
Keaton Mitchell, it's a very similar situation as the last couple of guys. You're playing the what if game, and I can see how this thing comes together. You've talked about this repeatedly in the Mike McDaniel offense. We've seen two top 10 running backs, two top five guys. That required Devon Achane to average about 8 yards per carry in one of those seasons. But guess what Keaton Mitchell's done over his career? Average about 8 yards per carry. We're talking about number one in EPA per carry, number two in yards per carry at 6.3. RB1 rush yards over expected among running backs with 100 carries since 2023. Like, that's what Devon Achane, that's what Raheem Mostert is bringing to this exact offense. Get him to the perimeter. He's going to be running behind two complete freak athletes at both tackle spots. Tyler Biot is going to calm down the interior as well. And then I think what's been interesting about him is he's never been a receiving back, but if you look at the competition that he's had in Baltimore, Justice Hill has been a very, very solid pass protector and receiving back. He, of course, is never going to be playing over Justice Hill in the pass game role. I think there's a chance that he can do that, carve out a different role that we haven't seen before. He's capable. Looking back at his college profile, he's capable. If you're looking at these training camp clips, I've seen him carry the ball fewer times than I've seen him catch a wheel route 60 yards downfield in these training camp clips. I think there's something to that. I think there's a chance he can carve out 8 to 10 touches per game at the expense of Amarian Hampton, who I think is a little bit boom bust as well. And in that situation, you get 10 touches. He's averaging 6 yards on them. We're talking about 60 yards per game. Like, that could be a flex candidate. So we'll see about this one. I think that he's so explosive. The wanted poster, I'm believing in this. And if we're getting receptions on top of this, that's a little cherry on top.
Yeah, there's a vertical route touchdown every single day of training camp Keaton Mitchell catching a pass down the field. And all Ravens fans are like, why didn't he do that for us? Yeah, I mean, I think it's really reasonable to say that both Amarian Hampton and Keaton Mitchell, that are running back 10 and running back 43 in ADP, can both pay off, despite, you know, logging onto Twitter and it has to be one or the other. We have, again, seen a Mike McDaniel offense where that has not been the case in 2023, running back 3 and running back 4 in points per game. And those, like, kind of had siloed roles in that spot. And sure, that was the second best scoring offense in the league, but the show that you and I did with Nate, where what the Chargers are predicted to be the 15th or 16th best team in scoring, top five, I think, is absolutely in the realms of possibility here. So I'm excited for this duo. I was going to ask you if you could fast forward and predict how many touches per game Keaton Mitchell would get. You said 8 to 10. That's a lot, but that's nice. And I guess my only concern, though, is if Amarian Hampton goes down, I think that they might keep Keaton Mitchell in mostly the same role that he has and kind of filter in Kamani Vidal in the other spot versus, like, oh, now we have a 75% Keaton Mitchell backfield, which would be legit electricity in my veins.
Yeah, definitely. Kamani Vidal is a real player. I think that he's going to factor in. It's going to be a three back committee, which is why I've been, like, more skeptical of Amarian Hampton than exactly where he goes, but I don't want to overthink this one. We want pieces of this backfield. I just find Keaton Mitchell's price tag the most intriguing. We draft a lot of RB2s on teams that are not going to be nearly as good as the Chargers. Yeah, I mean, there's like five or six of the RB2s going ahead of Keaton Mitchell. And we're talking about literally the most efficient player over the last three seasons, like all the important metrics out there and a perfect scheme fit. So I'm not overthinking this one. Last round, like, no doubt about it.
Yeah, well, one of our goals this summer is to exit every single draft with one LA Charger, and you wait until the last round to do it, but you got it. You got it at the whistle. All right, that does it. We have three more shows for you later on this week, and then preseason games kick off, and you need to be locked and loaded here on the channel. Again, the rankings are in the description down below for free, half PPR and full PPR. And then this show is all about you and helping you win your fantasy leagues.